Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Strantz here live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call, producer Dom, in the process of getting Batch on the hotline. He'll be able to join us momentarily here on the show. Keep your texts coming in as well. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we will get into some of them later on in the show. But we now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline, where we are joined by the play-by-play voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you guys?
We're doing well. I don't know about you, but I'm very, very excited to get the post-All-Star break schedule going for the Canucks, of course, with the way the team is playing. Then they go out and make the Lindholm trade. It should just be a really fun couple of months of hockey here leading in to the playoffs. What are you most curious about? You know, not just tomorrow against Carolina or this road trip, but just in general from the Canucks over the final 33 games. What has you most curious about this team?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing, at least for me, is going to be what Rick Tocchet does with the pieces he now has, including Elias Lindholm. And, you know, we've seen based on their practices both yesterday and today how they're going to start, we expect anyway, against the Hurricanes tomorrow. But how does that develop? How does that flesh out? Does Lindholm stay with Pedersen? Does the lotto line go back together? Does Lindholm end up in the middle or does he play on the wing? You know, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that he was on the net front on the power play at practice today too. So
yes,
is that
sir.
A spot where he could find a home? Is he a better fit in the bumper? And, you know, that's really what this last stretch of the season is for me with, you know, the way they've played to this point of the year, the position they've put themselves in. And sure, there's going to be interesting races for them in terms of trying to, you know, fend off teams like the Oilers and remain atop the division and, you know, a race with Winnipeg potentially for first in the conference or potentially first in the league. And those are all going to be compelling storylines down the stretch. But really, at this point, everything that they do from here on in is about preparing them to do as well as they can once the games start in the postseason in late April. So that's kind of the lens that I'm looking at the rest of the season through, is the tweaking they do now, the work they put in, the things they try to fix and get right so that they can be ready to roll come April 20th or whenever it's going to be when the postseason starts.
You know, looking how they lined up these last couple of days in Rally, and look, as you say, there's tons of options that Tocchet has, so we could see a bunch of different iterations of this lineup over the next couple of months here. But with Pedersen skating between Mikheyev and Lindholm, I mean, that's three players who have been very good defensively in their NHL careers traditionally. And, you know, typically it's been Miller and Besser taking on those matchup roles. But do you think it's maybe time or an opportunity at least to give that Pedersen, Mikheyev, Lindholm trio a chance as the first choice matchup line now?
I think there is an opportunity to do that. I'll be interested to see whether Rick Tocchet agrees and takes that opportunity, because I think, I think this anyway, and I know Drance does. I'm not sure if you agree, Jamie, but I think Pedersen is the guy that they should be using in a matchup role down the middle, just because of his two-way profile and the consistency with which he's been able to execute at both ends of the ice. And what was always preventing that with the lineup, you know, set up the way it is now, except with Lindholm in for Kuzmenko, was Kuzmenko. And the fact that Rick Tocchet didn't trust him defensively and didn't trust him in terms of key minutes and key situations. Well, now you've got Elias Lindholm, who you have to imagine the head coach is going to trust, or at least give him those opportunities early on. And, you know, why wouldn't he? He's got a much better track record at the NHL level than Kuzmenko had, certainly, and is a guy that, you know, you think fits in much better in terms of that line now having an identity. I don't really know if I could have given you an identity for the Mikheyev, Kuzmenko, Pedersen line, but I have an idea of the identity of Pedersen, Lindholm, Mikheyev line, which is to be hard to play against, to be smart defensively, to be able to limit the teams that they're playing against and the lines that they're deployed against. And then, you know, Mikheyev brings you speed and forechecking ability, and Lindholm and Pettersson can do the rest in terms of generating the offense. So that's going to be another fascinating part of this, is not just how they deploy those lines, and that's more of a longer-term thing, because I think we know how he's going to deploy them in the short term in terms of who's on which line, but then how he deploys them in terms of who gets the tough matchup minutes, who does he want to put out there against, you know, the opponent's top line. And to be perfectly honest, that's a question that we're not going to be able to answer effectively until they come home from the road trip, because when you're away from home, you don't have the last change. It's the other coach that dictates those matchups. And that's going to be an interesting part of this too, is what matchups do opposing coaches try to chase? Do they want their top line against the Pettersson line with Lindholm? Do they want it against the Miller line with Besser? And to be perfectly honest, if I was an opposing head coach, I don't want my top line out against either of those lines. And that speaks to the benefit of adding Lindholm in the trade, and the, you know, trickle-down effect that it has, not just by adding a good player, but in terms of the 1-2 punch that you have in your top six.
Batch, where do you think it went wrong for Andrei Kuzmenko this season? And do you think there's a level, like, what do you expect from him in Calgary?
Yeah, well, where it went wrong, I think, is that the standards and expectations of this organization passed him by. Like, he fit in well last year under Bruce Boudreau in a part of the season where the team was not doing well and was essentially out of the playoff race. And so he got more rope and he got more leash and used it very effectively. And look, he was a very effective offensive player last season. And he lost some of that this year, whether it was because of confidence, whether it was because he was trying to focus so much on rounding out his game to the way that Tocchet wanted them to play, that he, you know, wasn't focusing on the things that made him successful offensively. But that's sort of how I look at it, is that things changed very quickly for the team from being sort of a, you know, bottom feeder's not necessarily fair, but from being a team that would just have been happy to sneak into the playoffs to now being a team that considers itself a contender and wants to go on a deep run and contend to win the Stanley Cup. And for a player, you know, in his sophomore season, and oftentimes guys struggle in their second season in the league, to have the expectations around him change that drastically, I think was hard for him to adapt to in terms of elevating his own game the way that many others around him were able to. Now he goes to Calgary, and it's kind of a similar fit to what the Canucks were like last year, where, you know, now that they've made the Lindholm trade, we expect them to probably sell a little bit more. So there are going to be some other key pieces that will depart, and he's going to get a chance to play, and he's probably going to have a longer leash, and it's not going to be so much about, you know, you made that turnover, you didn't get the puck out, so now you're sitting for the rest of the game. He's going to have that opportunity to regain some of that offensive confidence. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see him have a good stretch run here with the Calgary Flames in terms of his personal production. But this is kind of the thing that many people in the Canucks organization alluded to, and it's going to be interesting to follow Kuzmenko's career beyond this season, is, look, he put up a lot of points on a team that wasn't very good. Can he fit into the mix for a team that is good? And it's clear that at least this season he couldn't when it came to the Canucks.
I'm going to give you a scenario, and then I'm going to ask you how the market will react to this hypothetical scenario if it plays out this way, right?
Okay.
So Canucks add Lindholm, and it makes them meaningfully better, but the shooting percentage regression that they should be due to hit at some point, given that no one ever shoots 13% forever, does sort of hit. Goals are a little bit harder to come by. You know, they're still winning games, but not at the same rate that they were in the first half, and Kuzmenko finds his groove down the stretch in Calgary. Will the market be able to understand that, or will we see the backseat driving?
Both. I mean, I think, and that's kind of a cop-out answer, but it's Vancouver, right? Like, we always had, like, the Benning Bros on one side and the draftists on the other side, right? Like, there's always going to be consternation and disagreement in this market, especially when it comes to trades. So you know, yes, if the Canucks are more average than they have been, let's say, down the stretch, and Kuzmenko goes to Calgary and lights it up, there will be segments of the fan base that will criticize management, that will say the Canucks lost the trade, that will say if they had been more patient with Kuzmenko, then he would have broken out for them. And there will be people in the fan base that I think, anyway, will more reasonably understand that, you know, it wasn't about short-term performance, this kind of move. It was about, you know, ability to win games as a team, not if one guy can produce more than the other, or, you know, if the team has a regression to the mean in terms of shooting percentage and results as a result. Because, Drancer, like, going back as far as I can remember, this market has always argued about this team and had people on both sides. So I don't see why it should change now. What I would hope, though, in that hypothetical scenario is that people understand that that if that happens, it's not a reflection of Kuzmenko leaving and Lindholm coming in or anything like that.
I think the other thing is you're right. People are always going to find something to argue about and disagree about, and that's fine. Like, that's what makes it fun to talk about the team and be a sports fan and be a Canucks fan. But it also, okay, we're going to do that for the next couple of months, but really it's going to matter what happens in the playoffs. And that's what sets this year apart from recent years, is even if they do have, you know, scuffle a little bit here after they get Lindholm and Kuzmenko's filling the net for Calgary, that's all going to be forgotten if they win, you know, at least a round in the playoffs, right?
Oh, exactly. But that's part of why I think that debate, again, in this hypothetical scenario, because it's entirely possible that Lindholm actually gives the Canucks a boost. And even though they have a shooting percentage regression, potentially, they still win a lot of games. Like, this is still a team that hasn't lost three games in a row all year long. And, you know, I guess we'll see if that happens here over the final 30-plus games. But you're right. I think those conversations fill the time while we're all waiting for this team to get to the playoffs. And it's, you know, that's ultimately, regardless of what side of these arguments you fall on, everybody's in the same camp that they want this team to have success, and they want it to have success when it matters. So if you lose, I don't know, 50, if you go 500 out of the All-Star break the rest of the way, but you win the Stanley Cup, nobody's going to care that you went 500 after the All-Star break, or even if you win a round or two or three, yeah. Right? Like, that, it's all about the playoffs now in this market, and that's a great place to be in because it's not somewhere we've been for quite a while.
What do you think? I was listening to Halford and Brough this morning, and Brough was making the point, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but also a little serious. You know, one of his concerns with this team is actually that it has been such an incredibly positive season. They haven't had to really fight through any adversity. And he pointed to, you know, Boston last year. You go back to Tampa's incredible record-setting season, and they go out in the first round. Are you buying that? Because I also look at it and, like, one, this team hasn't had any shortage of adversity over the last couple of years. But also, you know, they're still playing for something, which is the division and the conference. So it's not as if they can just throw it into cruise control for the next couple of months here.
Well, and Rick Tocchet won't let them either, right? Like, he always talks about earning your day, and what you've accomplished in the past doesn't mean anything. It's about what you're doing today and how you're preparing yourself going forward. Adversity, I think, could be good, because here's the thing, is you are going to face it in a playoff series at some point, right? It's not just going to be, I mean, you know, maybe for some teams it would be, but it's not reasonable to expect 16 straight wins and four sweeps on the way to a Stanley Cup. So you are going to have to deal with losing an important game. You are going to have to deal potentially with being down in a series and having to overcome that. The one thing I will say is, like, there has been what would be like micro adversities this year. Like, you look at how they were playing going into the All-Star break, and the fact that they had to come from behind in a couple of games in a row to earn points. You know, that to me is a sign that this team, you know, can overcome situations, at least in game, where they don't play well and put themselves in a tough spot, but find a way to get it done anyway. So those are the kind of things that give me confidence. But, you know, in terms of greater adversity, like, how do you respond if you do lose three games in a row? Well, if you don't, you know, if you don't go all season without losing three games in a row, and then suddenly you find yourself down 3-1 in a series and you need to win three games in a row, how do you deal with that? How does that sort of impact the way that you respond when the games really matter. And, you know, I'm of two minds on this, and you could talk to former players and they'll give you both perspectives on this, but there's always talk that, you know, teams need to learn how to lose in the playoffs before they can win. And so part of me says, you know, yeah, the Canucks, you know, you'd like them to have success in the playoffs this year, but part of this year is about learning and growing for this young core that outside of the bubble has not played in the National Hockey League playoffs. And then the other side of that coin is that because they don't have that experience, they don't know any better. And that gives them an opportunity on other teams that maybe do have baggage from past playoff failures, like the Edmonton Oilers or the LA Kings as examples. So, you know, this is what's going to be fascinating about it, is we're all going to find out, and we're all going to find out together. But, you know, that's the thing that I take away from this most of all, is regardless of how things go in the postseason, it is about the postseason again. And it's great to, you know, be talking about all of these conversations
yeah.
in that sort of context, rather in the context of, you know, well, Kuzmenko's having a great stretch run here in games that don't matter. What are things going to be like for him next year, and how is he going to fit in? We're talking about the here and now and what's going to happen this season.
I love Dr. Batch prescribing that the Canucks make like Michael Bublé at the All-Star game and microdose some adversity here.
Yeah, micro adversities. There you go.
micro adversities. Batch, JT Miller in the bumper today at practice. At least that's his starting point. Again, lots of movement. I was telling Jamie and our audience that Rick Tocchet was very excited by the amount of movement on the power play today. Like lots of audible, like, yeah, yes, good, let's go. Like he was very excited as the Canucks were moving around. But, you know, Miller starting out in the bumper spot, have we ever seen that?
I can't think of it. Like it's always been either the net front or the shooting presence, right?
Right.
Whether it's on one half wall or the other. And I like it on the face of it initially, because of all of the players on that power play, with the exception of Lindholm, because I haven't seen how he's going to fit in with this group yet, he's the most willing to just shoot the puck. And I think when this power play struggles, it's because they overpass and overthink and don't just grip it and rip it. And if there's one thing that JT Miller can do and will do if he gets looks in the bumper spot, is he'll fire pucks on net. He'll make the opposing goaltender make a save, or he'll create some chaos at the net front by getting pucks to the net. As opposed to Pedersen, who is a little more tentative, waits for his spots, and when he does pick his spots, he picks them very effectively in most cases. And Hughes, who, you know, when he finds that lane down the left wing wall, is a tremendous shooting threat. But other than that, is, you know, more effective on the power play by his distribution and being the quarterback of things. So we'll see how it works. Again, we'll see how long it lasts. The fact that, you know, there's lots of rotation means that Miller may not be in the bumper very often. But if he does find himself there, I like that, because I think he's the kind of guy that is going to create shooting chances for being in the middle of the ice.
The Canucks make it to March, let's say, 3rd, and they haven't made a trade. But they've got this newfound cap space created from actually saving money against the cap in the Lindholm deal, and they're looking around, just thinking about what to add. Would you prioritize additional forward size or additional defensive help?
Additional defensive help. Without a doubt. Just because in the event that they have injuries at forward, I have faith in some of the guys in Abbotsford and the way that they have played this year, that they could at least come up and fill in a pinch if you need them to. But as we've seen in past years, especially in Vancouver, you can never have enough defensemen. You can always use more. And we saw earlier this season, before they acquired Zadorov, when Soucy went out, like by far their toughest stretch of the season. And like I sort of chuckle calling it a tough stretch, because it was still a 500 stretch, was when they had to have Noah Juulsen and Mark Friedman in the lineup together on a nightly basis. And, you know, to Juulsen's credit, I think he's elevated his game a lot since that stretch and has become a much more valuable part of the blue line, but you need more defensive help. You need another guy in there that you trust to go in the event of injury and do a job for you on a third pairing. And, you know, would forward size be nice? Absolutely it would. Like, they're, you know, could you add another top six winger? Sure you could. I don't know where you're finding the cap space to do that. Like, every team in the NHL is imperfect, but I will take the way this forward group is currently constructed over, you know, not a lack of depth on the blue line, but just, again, you can always have more defensemen. And, you know, we haven't even seen Christian Molanin play at the NHL level yet this year, so he could be an option if that were to happen. But I just want more defensemen. I want as many of them as you can get, and that's what I would prioritize if I were this management group. And you're only looking to utilize the cap space you have before the deadline rather than maybe making a bigger move, which I'm not willing to rule out because it's Jim Rutherford, and we've seen Patrick Alvin be a gunslinger to this point. So, you know, I think the Lindholm trade is probably the biggest move they're going to make for the deadline, but I will not say it for sure, and I would not put money on it either.
Can you imagine if they just did another even bigger move? That would be fantastic. Wow. I love that. But you're right.
For our line of work.
It would be very good for our line of work. There's no doubt about that. Don't rule it out. Batch, appreciate it, man. Really looking forward to chatting hockey with you as we get closer to the playoffs here. Should be fun.
Sounds good. Let's do it. Thank you.
That is the voice of the Canucks, Brendan Batchelor. What do you make of the Canucks having faced any adversity concern brought up by Bruff on the morning show, Drance?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right.
So I think when I look at the two like canonical examples of this, right, are Boston last year and then Tampa in 2019, right? Like record-setting seasons, incredible years.
I don't see why we're talking about it in general. I guess the reason I buy it is I don't see it in general terms. I don't see it as being like Boston last year. Boston had like a 25-point cushion.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. That's why I think it's different.
Tampa Bay lost how many games? Like 10, 11 games all year? Like, for me, it's not about that. For me, it's that this group in particular, we've seen them run through like 56 games or the bubble or, you know, January and February of 2020 where they get rolling and they can keep it rolling downhill. Like, the character of this group is when things are going their way, I think they have enough talent that they can make a meal of it, right? We've seen it. Like, we've seen it over multiple half seasons, 36 game stretches, like somewhat repeatedly over the course of the past 4 or 5 years. What we haven't seen is this team, like, take a body blow, like, get staggered, and then recover. Now, if you want to argue that that's what happened when they were going 500 in November, I have some time for that, right? Like, that, hey, actually, that stretch maybe should have been worse, but this team showed resilience during that stretch to scrape some points. Like, I actually think that's a fair read, but, you know, that's still the side of this group that we haven't seen, like, to sustain the key injury, have to change the way you play and do it successfully, right? To be without a starting goaltender and, like, not make excuses, just like lean on your defensive structure and figure out how to scrape some points away. You know, that's sort of something we just, you know, that's been sort of the problem in the starts from this team in the past. Like, things get rolling against them and things keep rolling against them. Mm-hmm. It's like the overall volatile profile of this core group has been, when things go well, they can make a meal of it. When things go badly, they can't arrest it in time. You know, so I do think that part hasn't been tested. And for me, it's not about hockey history or something nebulous like, oh, well, Boston. Like, for me, it's more about what we've seen over multiple years from a group, even as we should note, like, hey, this group of stars has way better support now, right? This group of stars seems way more organized and way more disciplined in terms of how they're coached, in terms of the accountability that we actually, like, can witness. Like, we can see it when guys get benched, when guys' ice time changes. So, you know, there's reasons, too, to not worry about this at all. But I do think it's at least, if you're a worrywart Canucks fan like Jason Bruff, I think it's a fair thing to note.
Yeah, I mean, I first of all, I want to be clear because I was bringing Boston and Tampa up because I don't think it's applicable.
Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah,
They were free and clear. They were free and clear in their conference race, right? So they didn't have anything meaningful to play for. And I think in their cases, that was the much bigger thing than not facing adversity, right? It's that you're in coast mode for like 3 months or more going into the playoffs, and it's just really hard to flip that switch. I don't think that's the situation the Canucks are going to find themselves in. I do wonder, you know, as you point out, okay, maybe you could say it was that 500 stretch. I mean, it's interesting because if you prevent yourself from going through a real slump, like you don't get to face that adversity, but you prevented yourself because you were resilient. You know what I mean? And found a way to go 500 in that stretch. I think the closest you could find in this season would actually be after the Philly and Tampa games on the first road trip of the year, right? Because you beat Edmonton twice, you lay an egg against Philly, Tockett is really upset, right? They're, you know, they'd only won two games at that point, so there's all this concern like, oh boy, was that just a mirage? Here we go again. You lose again to Tampa, and then you finish up that road trip with a couple of wins, and you really don't look back after it. Like, that's probably the moment where the season was truly closest to unraveling, and they were able to arrest it. Now, look, that's a two-game slump, right? So it's not exactly major adversity, but that's probably the thing that fits the mold the most.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, that was an impressive stretch. Like the Philadelphia thing and then the Tampa Bay thing, those felt really familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way that they bounced back and put in, I mean, the Florida game, I think.
The Florida game was on it. That was on a knife's edge.
That was on a knife's edge. But then Nashville, St. Louis, and then the stretch, they reel off seven wins, including, you know, some really, really strong team performances, including in the shootout loss against the Rangers, right? That was the start of something. So, you know, fair enough. Like, if you want to say that was adversity and the Canucks overcame it, I also think if you want to say in November that was adversity and the Canucks overcame it, I'm not going to argue with you because I think it's a semantic argument. You know, like, I think that's a fair spin. But, you know, overall, if you still have some minor concerns, like, has this team really been tested with some of the gut-wrenching stuff that can happen over the course of a long season? You know, I think that's valid. Like, that's just my basic view of it.
All right, producer Dom is blowing his top over
losing
here.
His mind.
He's absolutely furious that we're on the air at 12:58. So we'll take a break. Lots more to get into here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts and questions in, and we will hear from Rick Tockett speaking post-practice as well. That's coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here, live from the Kintech studio. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll hear from Rick Tockett at some point in this segment, as he spoke to the media again following the Canucks' second consecutive day of practice ahead of playing Carolina tomorrow, kicking off a five-game road trip out of the All-Star break, are the Canucks. You know, lots to dig into from what you saw at practice over the last couple of days with how the Canucks are configured. And, you know, I know when we were doing it in the lineup notes section of the whiteboard, Drancer, you mentioned asking Rick Tockett, hey, all of a sudden you sub in Kuzmenko, who, as we all know, did not have the trust, to put it mildly, of Rick Tockett. You bring in a former Selke runner-up, very reliable player, and Lindholm, and put him in that spot. And all of a sudden, you've got Pettersson and McKayev and Lindholm on your second line together, your quote-unquote second line, and you asked him, like, hey, does that open up a lot of possibilities for you in terms of matchups? And I had to laugh because it was a very enthusiastic yes from Rick Tockett. You can tell that the puzzle guy is really, really excited to have this additional piece to play with. And You know, I was thinking he's got the
Catan expansion set.
Yes, exactly. He got the expansion set. No, that's the perfect way to put it. And he's really excited to get into it and dig into it and see what it's all about. But, you know, it did strike me looking at the lines because we're so used to Miller and Besser handling the matchup role for this team this season. But I think if you just showed these lines on paper to, a hockey fan from another city who doesn't watch the Canucks every game and said, who's going to go up against Tufts here? They would say, oh, Pettersson, McCabe, and Lindholm. Like, that's three guys with a really positive defensive reputation for a reason. And, you know, Rick Tocchet talked about, moving guys around, getting them soft matchups. You know, maybe we get that line soft matchups. Maybe we get the Miller and Besser line soft matchups. But I'm really curious to see how this shakes out. And more than that, how long does it take before we are talking about that trio as the no doubt about it matchup trio for the Canucks?
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, make no mistake, and I don't think people would, like, this club believes very strongly that the way that JT Miller plays in terms of the heavy game that he can bring with the skill level that he evidently has, you know, makes him a unique piece. And, you know, I mean... dating back to Alvin, talking about, like, hey, what was your reaction to watching the Stanley Cup playoffs? And this was during the offseason. And he said, well, one thing I think we have is we have, you know, a big, heavy centerman of the sort that can match up potentially with a team like Vegas. And, you know, he was referring to Miller. So, you know, I don't think people should discount how much this organization believes in, and with good reason. I mean, there's been no reason not to, but believes in JT Miller's ability to handle that role. He's been in it all year. The team has done nothing but win. You know, I think the Lindholm add to that line gives them the flexibility to play with different iterations of their matchup strategy. But I don't think this club's just going to go away from what's worked for them to this point.
Well, and I thought Batch made a really good point as well that, you know, especially on the road, we're going to see a little bit of how Tocchet wants to play it, but it's going to be fascinating to see how the opposing teams go after it, right? Because even if you think, you know, maybe there was, like, we can all remember, you know, the stretch where Miller and that unit going up against top lines and the results weren't great, but I still don't know that opposing teams are going to be, like, hunting that matchup necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, that's the matchup we really want to isolate. And that's a pretty good position for Rick Tocchet to be in, right? There's no clear kind of soft underbelly of the forward group, I don't think, anymore, where the opposing coach is going to say, okay, that's when we have to get our top line out. That's the matchup we feel really good about. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see from the opposing coach's point of view how they handle things against this new look Canucks lineup.
Yeah, we'll get a decent sense of it right off the hop here too, because, you know, this Boston team has occasionally fattened up their forward ranks, right? We've seen them occasionally, like, obviously their first option is to roll with the coil line between Marchand and Pasternak, but occasionally they'll fatten it up and throw JVR onto that line and play Marchand, you know, with, like, DeBrusque and Zacha a little further down the lineup. So, like, they reconfigure what they do sometimes based on the opponent. So right off the hop, we're going to have a chance to see one team that tends to be a little bit flexible with their forward deployment. How does Montgomery and the Bruins decide to attack this Canucks team? Likewise, you know, in Carolina tomorrow, you know, the Hurricanes have Aho, who they often throw at Tufts, but they also have Jordan Staal, who they often throw at Tufts. You know, I don't know that we're going to get a lot from Brind'Amour because there's two options for him and both of them, you know, sort of change places here and there. Like, he might go Aho versus Pettersson, Jordan Staal versus Miller, simply because of, like, a physical matchup thing as opposed to his assessment of anything else, right? I want the big center against the big center. I want, you know, the faster, gritty guy against the faster gritty guy, right? So that could be Brind'Amour's approach there. I don't know that we'll learn as much from that. So that Boston game to me is going to be really interesting in that I think it could tell us a fair bit about how teams, like, does a team like the Bruins feel like their best shot against the Canucks is to fatten their forward lines and their forward combos to handle Vancouver's forward depth?
I think another interesting thing, because we're talking about it kind of from a, you know, between games and game to game perspective. Okay, who's going to get the matchup in this game? What do we see? But I think within the game, the flexibility is going to be really fascinating as well. And how much, you know, Tocchet, I know, spoke yesterday at length about situational hockey, right? And I don't think he was meaning from one game to the next. I think he was meaning shift to shift in a game. You have versatile pieces. Like, he listed all the guys that can line up at center, who can also play wing, that they have. And I'm really curious to see. I mean, I think Tocchet is the kind of coach who will embrace that. You know what I mean? Who will say, okay, I'm not going to throw my lines in a blender necessarily out of panic, but I can do these different tweaks here or there, whether it's because we're trailing, you know, whether it's because we're protecting a lead. It's going to be really fascinating to see how much they do that as well, right? Whether it's, hey, we got to load up the Lotto line because we're chasing, or whatever it is, you know, get Lindholm out there with other line mates for a key defensive zone draw. You know, it's those in-game adjustments and those in-game modifications that I think are going to be huge from Tocchet's perspective too.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, the flexibility side is going to be fascinating too, as, you know, and if the Canucks end up moving things around a little further, right? Like, I feel like to some extent, the Lindholm, like what Lindholm brings could matter more, I think, in the event that the Canucks go away from this configuration. Like, if this works, you plug Lindholm in for Kuzmenko and you know, you get a little bit more control from your second line, maybe at the expense of a little bit of like offensive dynamism. And, you know, you're raring to go, continuing to play the way this team did in January when they began to look like a real contender. Yeah, I mean, I think if that's the case, then Lindholm's just going to be a good fit in the top six. It's almost like if this first try doesn't work, and then, you know, then we see the Canucks experiment with, okay, you know, are we going to try Miller on the wing with somebody? Like,
right.
Are we going to try a Miller-Lindholm? Like, you want to talk about a tough minutes line. Are we going to try Miller-Lindholm-Besser?
Yep.
And throw that at Tufts, right? Because that sounds nightmarish for opponents, right? Are you going to try Lindholm with Garland Joshua, right? And you know, maybe you have a fourth line then that's something like Lafferty with Bluger and Suter, and you can throw Hoglander into the top six. I mean, there's all sorts of different iterations that we could see once you get beyond this first look. So for me, the versatility question for Lindholm almost comes more into play as the season goes on and as the club experiments and in the event of injury and as things happen, right?
Yeah.
Because right now it's like plug and play, Lindholm's taking Kuzmenko's spot. This is sort of the first iteration and in some ways the most straightforward. The complexity of the Lindholm ad, I think, will become apparent when Rick Tocchet has those, you know, midnight whiteboard sessions with Adam Foote trying to figure out an answer to a specific problem. And the fact that the master key, as it were, right, is going to be a potential answer, especially if he plays as well in Vancouver as he has in the recent past in Calgary.
Well, and, you know, another layer to that is if they do go out and add another forward, right? Like, we've talked about, okay, do they have one more pickup? Is it on the blue line or is it size at forward? And, you know, if they do opt for another guy, like, I don't think they're going to go out and add it somebody who's a clear-cut top six caliber player, but a middle six, which, you know, as you always say, is the nice way of saying the third line. But the funny thing about that is, well, their third line's really good. So if you go and add a third line player, are they kind of just naturally going to be bumped up into the middle six, or are you going to bump them down to the fourth line? And then that brings a whole new list of, okay, potential possible configurations and, you know, your duos and who you can play together. So I do feel like you're right. Like, this is the first iteration. We'll see how it goes. We'll see what the results are, who's playing well together, all of that. But then you could get another wild card thrown in the mix come, you know, before the trade deadline at some point as well, which, look, I love seeing and like witnessing the process of Tocchet work through these kinds of things. So I think that would be a really fun thing to see if it does happen.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking a little bit today about how, the Canucks. So, Sorry, what were I literally just lost my train of thought mid sentence. What were you talking
if they
about?
Add somebody else. If they add somebody else, right? If they add like a third line right. caliber player, but you're not breaking up that third line in all likelihood, unless it's a really big move,
so
right?
Now I remember. Yeah. I was thinking today about how, like, come what may, right? Whether it's a big trade, whether it's a loss, whether it's a proactive change after a win, whoever gets scratched, I mean, in the event of thermonuclear war, one standard remains: Joshua Blueger Garland.
Seriously, like what would it have to take? I mean, other than they go cold or they stop being good, but they've been so good. Like, you can move anything else around anywhere on the board. I'd be quicker to break up Miller and Besser, and they've played basically all the whole season together, than I would that third line at this point.
Yeah, I mean, people have been trying to, like, and rather painfully, in my opinion, come up with different nicknames for that line.
Yes.
And it's like, maybe they should be the cockroach line, because they'll outlive us all.
They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, that's just, that is what it is. And, you know, I think there's good reason for it, right? Like, that line's been fantastic.
100%.
They've been Vancouver's best and most consistent five-on-five line, and not by a little bit, all season long.
Well, like, and I think, I mean, that line could really stand to benefit from the Lindholm acquisition as well, right? Because they were really, as much as we call them the third line, and they have that kind of traditional third line makeup where they're not clear-cut top six guys, they were playing as the second line for a long stretch there, or at very least like 2A or 2B, you know what I mean, after the first line in terms of their five-on-five minutes. But if the Canucks do establish two real functioning, you know, performing top six lines, we're talking about the matchup game and, okay, who do opposing coaches throw their best guys out? Well, it's not, if the Lindholm-Pettersson line and the Miller-Besser line are both clicking, the Blueger line, as well as they're playing, is going to be an afterthought to a degree for opposing coaches, right? So that means they could see an increase in some of those really favorable matchups and be put in a position to do even more damage than they've been able to already.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's hard to do more damage than they've done. Like, they've done truly.
Well, they'll be
right?
in a position to sustain it at any rate.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they can sustain it because it's built on a controlling play at an elite level. And you know, I think we're in a unique spot with that line, right? In that what you don't often see, and this is something I think the Canucks may have going on right now. You know, I don't think it's going to surprise anyone to hear that I'm like a little bit higher on Connor Garland than market. And I think the market's turned around on Connor Garland, right? Like, I think people appreciate a lot more what he does now than they did 2 months ago.
Sure.
But I mean, in terms of this guy's ability to produce five on five, right? And yes, the goals have been hit and miss for him this season, but his primary assist rate since he's become a Canuck has been through the roof. His overall point production in his 3 years in Vancouver is, you know, like low end top line, not top six, low end top line level. And he drives play. You know, I kind of think that there's at least an argument to be made that Garland might be a top line caliber player. And the thing about top line caliber players is we almost never see them get stuck with this level of discipline on a third line. Like, usually if you've got a guy playing the way Garland has played for the Canucks all year, they get moved up the lineup. Right. But in this instance, and I think it's partly because of his size, I think it's partly because we haven't seen him really develop chemistry with Miller or Pettersson, and they're going to be stapled as center one and center two. I think for those sort of like almost happenstance, like unique reasons, Garland remains sort of a fixture at third line right wing. And that's a real, like, you know, we don't have large samples of players this good playing this low in a lineup for like 100 minutes, or sorry, for like 1,000 minutes. But he's going to come up on that over the next week. And it's a real rarity. Now, the other question that I have is, you know, what if in addition to having a top line caliber player on their third line, the Canucks also have a top six caliber guy in Nils Höglander
playing
on their fourth line.
Yeah.
Right? And if you're going to, like stand athwart the inevitability of regression and yell no. Well, having players that good playing in supporting roles might be a reason to think that this Canucks team can continue to outkick their coverage, can continue to shoot as you know, historically efficiently as they have to this point. Am I buying that? You know, I'm certainly going to say that it reduces my confidence in the inevitability of regression marginally, but that's about it. Like, you know, you've got like four players shooting 20%. I think that's going to be hard to manage going forward as the sample expands. But, you know, it is a real strength of this team. And I think a real, like, differentiating strength that they've been able to rely on all season long. Like, I don't think we should undersell that, you know, the logic of bringing in Lindholm, in my view, was like Pettersson and Miller need more help at the top of the lineup. And, you know, the bottom six anyway has been a crucial, like maybe the, aside from Demko, the crucial injury in Vancouver, crucial engine in Vancouver's success to this point. Like, I really think it's one of the biggest edges they're going to have over everybody over the balance of the season and going into this into the playoffs. That is, unless they end up needing those guys to come up the lineup and sort of stabilize things, which to this point they haven't needed, and maybe the Lindholm acquisition helps them avoid that.
Well, and having players like Connor Garland or Nils Höglander, who are, you know, qualified to be farther up a lineup but are playing in your bottom six, I mean, that's kind of a hallmark of a contender, right? Like, think about Nick Waugh playing fourth line for the Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm not comparing either of those players in terms of what they can bring to Nick Waugh necessarily, but my point is, you know, one of the hallmarks of a Stanley Cup contender is, like, other teams look at it and say, wow, I can't believe that guy is on their fourth line, or I can't believe that guy is on their third line. And you're right, that is a legitimate strength of the Canucks this year. I think it also makes it fascinating having those players in the bottom six, because it's easy to say, like, hey, go out and get some size and some physicality for the bottom six. But, you know, there's really only one obvious name that's like an easy take out of the lineup, and that would be Nils Åman, but he's playing center. So you would, in that situation, you would want it to be a center. Now, you could drop Pugh Suter down potentially, but that means somebody's going up and playing in your top six. So you want them to be, you know, presumably an upgrade over Pugh Suter, which is not necessarily easy to do. So don't get me wrong, like, it's a fantastic thing that they have going, having that caliber of players in the bottom six. I do think it makes the logistics and of finding that marginal upgrade at forward still a little bit more tricky, right? Because you have to consider what the domino effect is going to be and who's potentially getting taken out of the lineup in that situation.
Yeah, except that right now, if you added one more forward, the guy who would, you know, be most likely to come out is Nils Åman.
Right, but then you have to have someone who's playing center. So it just makes it a little,
no,
you know what I mean?
What do you mean? You have like six centermen in the lineup.
Sure. Okay.
So right now, Suter, like just count them out. Suter, Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm. That's just in your top six. That's four centermen in your top six right now.
I get that.
Plus Åman, but we'll subtract him so he doesn't count. Plus Blueger, and then Lafferty can play some center in a pinch, and Dakota Joshua can take some draws for you in a pinch. That's seven guys.
But my point is, if you go out and trade for winger X and you say, okay, we'll take Åman out of the lineup and let's say bring Pugh Suter down to the fourth line, then presumably winger X is stepping into Suter's place at the top of the lineup. You know what I mean? So they have to be a player that you feel credible being in that position for it to make sense to go out and get them.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, we're in relatively uncharted ground viewing Pugh Suter as credible in that sort of position in the lineup, right?
Yeah, Pugh Suter's just so awesome that I believe he can do it more than player X out there.
You don't have to sell me on my guy, bro. But no,
Pugh Suter can,
like,
do anything.
he really can, though.
It's fantastic. All right.
But yeah, no, I'm just, you know, I do think it's worth noting the overall, like, I still would love to see the Canucks add size. Like, I still would love to see them add a Greenway type on the wing, especially if that player could, you know, play some net front on the power play. Like, I think that's still an area that I'd like to see the club address a little bit. I think it matters for this team. But, you know, I don't think Batch is wrong, like, in the last segment when he talked about viewing defense as the bigger need. I'm guessing Dom's mad at us.
Dom is so mad at us. We didn't get a chance to hear from Tockett, but I promise we will play in the next segment Rick Tockett's commentary after practice today. So final segment coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. You're so worried about time on when we're getting to break, but then you play the super long rejoiner that we don't want to cut off coming back. Tom, milking the time, eating up the clock.
Tom asked me to do it once a show.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express out Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Somebody texts in support of me and Drantz, against you, Dom. Does Dom also tell Friedman and Merrick to hurry and wrap it up?
Yeah.
Dude, they're rolling with the conversation. Let it breathe. Do you?
Yeah.
How do they react? Similar to us?
No, they are actually very supportive of my directions.
I am so skeptical, so deeply skeptical of
actually,
that
just speaks to your ego, honestly. Actually, I have free roam over, I have creative freedom over 32 Thoughts.
Wow.
A lot of times we will have an addition or some sort of amendment, and Freedom will just be like, do whatever you think sounds best. Total editorial freedom on my
Congratulations. Board. That's a powerful post right there.
This is like one of those press conferences that actors sometimes give, and they're like, yeah, and I ad-libbed the whole thing. And then, like, their joint presser with the director and Khan is, like, super tense.
The screenwriter's sitting at home like, wait, what? I wrote all those lines. What are you talking about? You didn't ad-lib that. Anyways, it is the final segment of the show here on Canucks Talk. As mentioned, do we have the Tockett audio? We're good to go? All right, here is Rick Tockett speaking to the media after the team practiced in Carolina today.
Rick, what do you think about the group today?
I think it's been a pretty good 2 days. You know, we've accomplished a lot. I didn't want to cramp too much in, but some system play. Only wanted to go 45, but we had power play, so it was a little bit longer than I wanted to, but we'll have an optional tomorrow and be ready for Carolina.
I talked to Ian Cole about what the key is to continuing to play the way you did on the backside of the break. What for you is that? He talked a lot about preparation.
Yeah, I think preparation and discipline. You know, discipline's a thing where not everybody likes it, but you got to love to do. You know, that's what we want to do. We want to love discipline. I know it's hard, but for our team with these, you know, the back half of this season here, you know, we get a lot of publicity, which is great to a point. I think we just got to make sure that we don't buy into this hype, that we in this room know who we are, how we play, and we want to be a disciplined team. So that's really for the message for the second half.
And you're referring to discipline in the sense of like their focus and the way they approach each game and each practice?
I'm talking about everything, on the ice, off the ice, the way we think, you know, our system, being unselfish, you know, going on the ice early, working on your game, eating properly. I mean, that's the discipline. If you want to be, go far in the playoffs, if you want to make the playoffs, if you want to win, you have to go through these things. And all the teams that win are the most disciplined.
After practice, we noticed a lot of one-on-one opportunities and some extra coaching. What were you focusing on there?
Just for me early on, a shot release with some of the forwards, scenarios. You know, obviously, PD playing with Lindholm, talking about some stuff that can make us better. Just a lot of one-on-one teams. That's the way we are. And then we get home, we got the Twins, and obviously Gaunch is going to be on this trip. So we got a lot of hands on deck.
You spent a lot of time talking to PD. I wondered if you were negotiating his next contract.
Yeah. I'm trying to, well, if I did, I want 10%, you know.
Without revealing everything, what was that about?
It's just about him playing with Lindholm. Just some scenarios, some power play scenarios, some stuff going forward. I'm asking his opinion on our practices. You know, it was a bunch of different little things, but it was a lot of, with him and Lindholm playing together.
And what do you think of Mikheyev's play? His scoring has obviously dried up lately before the break. Are you concerned?
No, I'm not concerned with the scoring. This is a big. I'm playing with these two guys, and I got to see some forechecking from them. I got to see some winning, some battles, and I think coming up with loose pucks when you're playing with those two kind of players like that. So I want him to drive the play, especially as a top forechecker for us, because you know when you, you should get Jim Juice. You know he's got guys that have the puck a lot that can hold on to pucks and can make plays. So you know this is a test for Mick. I mean I got to see some good stuff out of him here on this line.
I know that. You've tried different guys, and for instance, Pew Suter right now is playing the wing. How anxious are you to find some guys who can play on the wings on those top two lines and give you what you're looking for?
No, it's not that I'm anxious, but my eyes are wide open here. I mean, there's a job open here. So people have to be ready. You know, I talked to Garland the other day. I mean, I don't want to break that third line, but maybe Gar's, you might be ready for active duty on that. Who knows? I don't know. But when you play with top players, you got to come up with loose pucks. You got to go to the net. You got to go through the middle. You got to chase pucks down, and you got to be good wall guys when you play with that, So that's what we're looking for.
I know that he went out of the lineup not long after you took over as coach, Mikheyev.
Yeah.
It's about a year now since he had the surgery. And a lot of times in ACL, guys, 6 months later, they're fine. Or back to where they were. Some people it takes a year or more. Do you think he's still working his way back? Do you think there's another gear that he can find?
Yeah, I think that. I think for me, when you have an ACL, I've heard there's different signs to it. I think it's a little longer than people think it is. I think what's it, the 8-9 month? I think it's longer. I actually was talking to Tom Wilson, who had the same knee problem in Washington at the All-Star game. And it's, he's starting to feel better now. So, I think he came back fairly early, 7-8 months. So all fairness to Mick, he came, he's around that eight month. I can't remember. So, I'd like to see a little bit more time for him to get acclimated. But I think there's about 10% more there speed, I think. And he's starting to, I think I can feel it starting to come. I really do.
You seem to have fairly open communication. Is that something you check in on at certain points in the season? How they're feeling? Yeah, especially when you're coming back from such a big injury.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he came into my office 2 weeks ago and said, "Hey, coach, how can I play better? What can you expect from me?" So, that's the communication I want. I want not only I have to go search for him. He wants to search out what the coach's opinion of it. That's what coaching's all about. Whether it's my door or one of the other coaches. You got to be able to have that one-on-one kind of conversations with the guys and even talk about other stuff, too. It's not always about hockey.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after the team practiced in Carolina today. Of course, they'll play the Hurricanes tomorrow evening, kicking off this five-game road trip out of the All-Star break. And some interesting tidbits in there from Rick Tocchet, Dranser. The line that stands out to me near the beginning of that presser, we got to make sure we don't buy into the hype, that we know who we are. And we have talked a lot, very rightfully so, I think, about the job that Rick Tocchet has done as a coach this year. So has everyone else in the market. So have people around the NHL, because it's been such an impressive job of coaching and guiding this team. And, the challenge, I don't want to say it's going to increase necessarily, but there's going to be new challenges, I think, down the stretch. And, somebody texted in earlier in the show, said, "Guys, one thing I'm curious to see in the playoffs is if the Canucks can amp it up even more. It seems Tocchet has them buying in and playing hard already. Do they physically have any more to go to give, as it always seems necessary in the spring?" And I just think the job that Tocchet does for between now and the playoffs and then into the playoffs as well, as managing the kind of ups and downs of this team, keeping them focused, keeping them disciplined, as he said elsewhere in that presser and then trying to get them to amp it up even more once the playoffs roll around. Like, that's a new challenge. It's going to be fascinating to see how he manages it. He's talked a lot about, you know, the practice schedule and keeping it fresh physically, but it's a mental challenge too. Now, he's aced all of those challenges when it comes to making sure the mentality of the team is on point, and I'm very interested to see how he tackles this one too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also curious to see what resolution he got on the Pettersson negotiations.
10%.
That's a pretty significant commission, man.
Woo! It's like, you better really be increasing. You better be doing a way better job than Pat Brisson if I'm giving you 10%. Yeah, I
mean, 10%? My goodness. I mean, maybe stick to coaching if you're trying to charge like that. The ramping up in the playoffs, the thing is that the atmosphere, like the environment calls
yes.
for it.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not the club is successful in the playoffs, this team's effort level, the line that they'll have to play on, and they will play on. I mean, straight up, they will play on it. Like, there's no, these are hockey players, man.
Yeah.
These are hockey players. Like, come what may, whatever you think of this group, whatever you think of their ceiling, like, these are NHL players. You are going to see a level of reckless abandon in terms of this team's compete level come playoff time that you just can't. Like, you cannot see it in the regular season outside of, you know, certain stretches, right? Like, you see glimpses of it. You see moments where it's like, hey, this feels, you know, it's tight, kind of like a playoff game. Like, the fact is that a real playoff game feels different always, always and forever. And you're going to see that the moment the puck drops in the postseason for this team. No doubt in my mind. Take it to the bank.
Well, and Curtis Olin texted in, you know, most or all of these players have never played a playoff game with the home crowd. And of course, you and I have talked so much about this, right? It's been 2015 was the last time they played playoff games at Rogers Arena. Now, if that drought ending in any way was always going to produce an incredible atmosphere at Rogers Arena for puck drop of game one, right? Whatever form that takes. But
can't wait.
I think the fact that it's going to come, and we'll see how the final 33 games go here, but the fact that it's not going to be, you know, hey, they're the eighth seed going up against a prohibitive favorite. The fact that they're going to go in with home ice, that they're going to be, you know, they made a big trade ahead of the deadline. They are a Stanley Cup contender. Like, that's just going to ratchet it up even more. Like, that, again, the atmosphere was always going to be phenomenal and fantastic because, as you said, it's a Stanley Cup playoff game. It's, you know, a drought ending in this market for fans to be able to go to it. But, like, this isn't just, hey, I'm so happy we're back in the playoffs. This is, like, let's go on a run here. And I think that's going to make it even more, I mean, more amazing, more entertaining, but more intense as well.
Yeah, I mean, this season's...
There's expectations. There's real expectations.
Right. That's exactly what I was about to say. This team's going to go into the playoffs with expectations, although, you know, and I think it's important to note this. Honestly, I know people are going to be like, oh, wet blanket Drance, but there's so much season left to play out.
Yep.
You know, the season is long enough that every take has time to be right. it's like one thing that I've increasingly thought about. And every take has time to be wrong, too. There's so much season to go that, you know, I'm not worried about this team raising their level in the playoffs. I'm not worried about the atmosphere being incredible at Rogers Arena. That stuff's for sure.
Yes.
What this team's going to look like, what their expectations are going to be, how we're talking about, you know, this team. I mean, there's a million different scenarios here, right? This team could drop to second in the Pacific because the Oilers stay hot and be hosting the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, with Shea Theodore and Jack Eichel back, and they could open as dogs, you know, in terms of their playoff series probability going in. They could also win the President's Trophy and be hosting Nashville in the first round as, like, minus 175 favorites in the first round, right? A team that they've really controlled play against and beaten pretty soundly every time they've played this season. You know, they could hobble into the playoffs with a key injury. They could be at absolute full strength and make an additional add between now and then. So, you know, I get that we're looking ahead, but in terms of setting our expectations, like, so much context is stripped out. I think this team with 33 games to go has given themselves a real shot to go into the playoffs with the most positive possible scenario, but there's still a lot to earn before we get there.
And, you know, speaking of not exactly knowing what this team might look like. And, you know, we are kind of having the conversation about the forward depth, what it might mean for an additional add. And, you know, Rick Tockett speaking in that media scrum that we heard.
The Garland thing, eh?
Well, the Garland thing, even just framing it as there's a job available, right? And I think he was referring specifically to the Pugh Suter spot. And I don't think it was a criticism of Pugh Suter, but, you know, just saying...
No,
like,
how can you criticize Pugh Suter?
How dare you? No one would ever dream of doing
something. No one would dare.
I won't allow it. No, but it was just... I thought it was very, you know, typical talk. It very frank and honest and candid and direct. Like, yeah, that spot's open. And there's a bunch of candidates. I thought it was fascinating that he spoke with Connor Garland about it. And I mean, even... look, I don't think Linus Karlsson is going to be all of a sudden surprise top six feature of this playoff run for the Canucks. But even, you know, I know what Tockett was saying yesterday of, hey, yeah, he's here. He has a chance to practice with us. He's got a chance to show us something. He does some things I like. There's some things he wants to work on. But, yeah, this is an opportunity for him. And it feels like Tockett is still very much keeping his options open and kind of looking for the final piece of the puzzle, or one of the final pieces of the puzzle, potentially on that line next to Miller and Besser.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Garland being the next guy up makes so much sense in that we have seen Hoglander get a look there.
Yep.
You know what I mean? We've seen Suter get a look there. Like, we've seen various iterations of it, but that's one we just haven't seen. Like, we haven't seen Garland play, you know, with Miller and certain with either of Vancouver's top two centers. Aside from the first two games of the year before Mikheyev came back. So, you know, makes sense that that would be the one he'd spotlight, because that's the one he doesn't have a sample to evaluate on.
Yeah.
Like, that's the piece of the puzzle where it's like, that's an unknown. And, you know, puzzle guy Rick Tockett is thinking about it.
He hasn't flipped over the piece of the jigsaw puzzle yet.
Yeah, he doesn't know. He doesn't even know if it's a border piece. And then the Mikheyev thing. Now, this was like a hobby horse of mine all summer, remember? Was like, this takes time, right? And I liked Tockett. Sometimes Tockett will say something that sounds simple, but it actually, I think, betrays the depth of research that he's done about it, right? So, like, in talking about returning from a torn ACL, right, I'll often cite that the Europeans think it's 2 years.
Yep.
Right? And North Americans tend to think it's 12 to 18 months. But there is a split. And his first answer right off the hop is, you know, there's different science on it. Right? And it's like, I guarantee you he knows what I'm... I guarantee you he's talking about the same study gap that I am. Like, I guarantee it. Like, I'm certain of it. And that's, you know, I think part of what's made Tockett so effective, right? He, I think, is... putting the work in from a like intellectual curiosity standpoint, you know, above and beyond what you'd expect, and that's commendable. In terms of the Mikheyev discussion, though, it's just amazing, right? Because he came in and that line was going so well and scoring so frequently that I feel like we just kind of delayed the discussion.
Yep.
Even though from a play driving perspective, it's been there, you know, really ever since he first sustained that injury in his Canucks preseason debut, you know, last October. Like, it's been a long time where I think Mikheyev's been a little bit compromised relative to the speed and burst and play-driving ability that he has and that he's shown for much of his career. And I'm honestly, he's at an age. I'm still confident it's there. I just, you know, I'm curious to see what it looks like over the course of the season. And hopeful to see that maybe, like, maybe the break was helpful to him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that it is. But you'll, again, the thing with Mikheyev is you'll know, like, when that guy's moving at full speed, he's a bullet train. He's a superhero. He flies out there. It's the loudest possible skill set. You cannot miss it when it's there. And if he just looks fast and not like one of the fastest human beings you've ever seen skate, then you know it's a little bit different. For him.
And, you know, Tockett did leave the door open while acknowledging the medical stuff with Mikheyev. He did leave the door open a little bit, like, hey, he's got to do these things in this role, right? So it might not just be one job that's up for grabs. I think he left that door open. But as we've talked about, I also think Mikheyev's going to get a lot of runway to prove that he can play that role, right? There's a reason they went out and identified him and signed him when they did, you know, well before they looked to be this type of competitive team. And I think it's just if he gets back to not even 100%, but really close to that level of effectiveness, it's such a clean fit playing with Pettersson and Lindholm in terms of what he can do and the defensive responsibility of that group. I think they're going to give him an awful lot of time to prove that he can do that role. Now, maybe you get close to the playoffs or you're starting to, you know, you have to have that conversation at some point about different options there. But somebody earlier when we were talking said, I think Mikheyev would move down the lineup faster than Pugh Suter. I don't think so. Not least because Suter's a center, so you could move him down to the fourth line. But also, I just think they're really invested in seeing if Mikheyev can do that role. And, you know, speaking to about Tocchet putting in the work as a coach, definitely a hallmark of what we've seen from him so far in Vancouver. And as you said off the top of the show, and he discussed a little bit there in the presser, you know, 10 minutes on the ice with Elias Pettersson after practice, talking about playing with Lindholm, talking about different scenarios on the power play, talking about, you know, getting his opinion on practices and whether that's like the schedule for practices or what they're doing, whatever the case is, but putting in the work, putting in that FaceTime with one of his star players ahead of a big road trip here.
Well, I'll tell you what, Pettersson wants that.
Yeah.
Like, that's something Pettersson wants, historically anyway. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's not common to have, like, I've seen coaches go around, have a bunch of one-on-one chats, but that was an extended conversation today at Center Ice. And, you know, to hear Tocchet explain what it was about, or at least in part, right, that it's really on the minutiae of what he wants to see from a new-look line. I mean, that's fascinating insight from the Canucks head coach. And now we'll give him the lion's share of the credit if that line pops off right away.
it was that conversation with Tocchet that did it right there at Center Ice with Elias Pettersson. We'll get a chance to see it in action, or at least some version of this Canucks lineup in action, for the first time tomorrow in Carolina. Dom, I'm getting out so on time here. I'm absolutely crushing it.
Punctual, Jamie.
That's me. See, the
What's
one
up?
That matters.
Just being punctual.
The one that matters, I know what to do.
Good for you.
Thank you, Dom.
Thank
I appreciate
you for doing
that.
Your job. By the way, we'll have Yannick tomorrow since there's no people.
Ooh,
show.
Very exciting.
Yay!
Yannick Hansen on the show tomorrow. We'll set up the game with Carolina.
Will Jamie be on time?
Yes, I will. Of course
for
I will.
For that segment.
Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow here on Sportsnet 650.